Hi there, I'm Cynthia Dearen, and welcome to the Business Beyond Borders podcast, where we unpack the secrets of international business success. Is it really possible to go from being a hairdresser to the owner of an international HR consultancy that spans 9 time zones? Well, that's exactly what my guest today, Corinne Bott, did. Born and raised in Paris, Corinne followed in her mother's footsteps and trained as a hairdresser before an allergy to ammonia put an end to that particular dream. A few years later, she followed somebody who turned out to be the man of her dreams to Australia, and her company, Polyglot, was born several years after that. Corinne has built Polyglot into a global company, and we're going to talk about how she did that today and how she juggled a life as an entrepreneur alongside the challenge of raising a family. Corinne, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for being my guest today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. You travel a lot, don't you? And before we started to record, we were just chatting about some of your travel. Can you tell us what you've got coming up between now and the end of the year? Where are you going, and what will you be doing while you're on the road?
I'll be first starting with the States, LA and San Francisco, to visit our USA subsidiary. So that's in 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. Then back for 5 weeks to Australia, and then heading to Europe for Barcelona, then Paris office for 3 weeks. And then back here around mid-October, I believe. I'm not doing South Africa until beginning of 2019 because I've just been there. So yes. You know, it's every 2 months somehow, you know.
And how do you like the international travel schedule? Is that a part of the business that you enjoy, or is it something that you find challenging?
Look, I do enjoy it now because I don't have young children at home, so it's much easier.
Yes.
And that's why I didn't push the international development until 5 years ago.
Yes.
Because I knew what to expect. Didn't think it would be that busy in terms of travel, but look, I enjoy it. I tend to, try to juggle some break, some holidays in between.
Yes.
It is extremely hard when in 3 months you do a world trip, around a world trip. It's hard because I'm not getting younger. and it's harder to when you come back actually to cope with jet lags.
Yes.
But apart from that, I enjoy it because I get to meet people. I get to meet the team everywhere they are. I tend to try to get some summer when I'm in winter. It doesn't work out that way sometimes. But last year I was in January and February in Europe, which is not the best month.
Yes.
But trying my best.
it sounds pretty idyllic. And today we're going to talk about Polyglot, which does a range of things, but really specializes in tailored solutions in human resources, in recruitment, payroll, outsourcing, language and business. And we're going to talk about how you started the company here in Australia and then expanded it overseas. But I want to give people listening some context, and I'd love it if you could just tell us about the rather surprising way that you started out, because you started your career as a hairdresser. And I'm fascinated to hear the story about how you began as a hairdresser and wound up in human resources. Can you tell us how you became a hairdresser and what happened after that?
Okay, that was not in Australia, that was in France. And my mum had a hairdressing salon, and obviously I was raised in the hairdressing salon. When I was in my year 12, the equivalent of year 12 for my baccalaureate, I decided that I would not become a journalist or an HR or whatever, like doing typical university study, but I wanted to be my own boss somehow. Okay, I didn't know it back then, but I chose to get on my mum's path somehow. I saw her evolve, have a business. And I really think that's what I wanted. So that's why I started to learn hairdressing right after my baccalaureate, which usually you do it much earlier. You don't go all the way to your baccalaureate. But thank God I did go to my baccalaureate, because after a while, after I'd done all my studies, after I think 2.5 years or something, and I worked a little bit, I happened to have allergy to ammonia, and therefore I had no choice but to stop for health reason, and that was another shock. But an early on shock. When you're 21, you can, much easily choose another path, even though back then it was a shock.
Were you upset when you discovered you wouldn't be able to go on being a hairdresser, saying that's what you had planned?
Obviously, I was upset because my plan was not going according to what I wanted. And on top of it, I back then didn't see how I could, be my own boss, not being a hairdresser somehow.
Do you ever cut hair now?
I do if I have to, but it's just I don't have time anymore. My husband can't find a hairdresser he likes. He's been hassling me to keep on cutting his hair, but it's really, I don't have the time anymore. But I could if I had to.
I like that. So you hung up the scissors and had to pick something to go on with.
I had to go back to study. But yeah. I had been working and I had been independent and I had left my parents' place in Paris, I decided to do my my bachelor and my master while I was working. So it hasn't been a very easy. I mean, it seems common for Australian, but in France it's not common. Mm-hmm. You usually stop school, high school, and then you go to uni, and then you have a good time when you are a student. That's not what I had, because I went to work full time, and then the company I was working for actually subsidized my study. And I choose human resources because it's really, I'm a people person. I've always been a people person. Hairdressing is this. Huh? And I picked psychology and work psychology. And it might seem very different, but it is not that much. Because when you are here in a hairdressing salon, you just listen to everybody's little bits and pieces. And if you're not a people person, you might be a good hairdresser, but you're not a good business person in the hairdressing salon. So, and what it taught me also, which I didn't realize until I started actually my own business, or actually I started as a recruitment, headhunter, is that you learn also all the business acumen and all the customer service. And you need to remember that a customer that came the week before, her little dog was sick. And then when she comes back the week after, you need to remember and ask her about the dog and so forth. So it teaches you, they are transferable skills, I must say.
Yes. So you worked and you studied at the same time.
Yeah.
And then what happened after that? And also, can you tell me about how you wound up in Australia? Because at this part of the story, you're still back in Paris studying.
And I'm not thinking about Australia at all. So Australia is far away on a map. I know where it is roughly, but I wouldn't have been able to place Perth or Sydney or Melbourne on the Australian card. So Australia was not a dream for me. What happened is that so I go back to my study around my 20th, and then in March, April, March 1990, I take the train to go from Paris to Bordeaux, and I meet my partner in life and in business actually now, and in crime, if I may say. That was supposed to go to Australia 3 weeks after I've met him. So I ended up, after finishing my study, which was, in June, joining him in Australia. So that's the link.
That's very fast. I got goosebumps when you just told me that little bit of the story. Did you just make a decision on the spur of the moment that you would go with him and see what happened? Is that what transpired?
Not on the moment when I met him in the train, because I didn't know. He didn't tell me straight away he would be going all the way across the world, obviously. He did a good sales job, as you say. But pretty quickly. I met him in March, beginning of March, and he left for Easter for 18 months. So we had to make a decision pretty quickly, and he asked me to join him, and I said yes, and then I joined him. And you know, sometimes you don't know it's for life, but you know you've got to do it.
Yes.
And that was one of that moment, and it's exactly like in business. Life is like business is part of life, but it's sometimes you need to follow your gut feeling.
Yes.
And the gut feeling was, I have to go.
Yes.
I have to try this. And I didn't even think it could not work. We just did it. It was just, a moment like that where I don't regret to have not listened to my head, but listened to my gut feeling.
And 28 years later, you're still cutting his hair. I love it. So what did you think of Australia when you got here? Because I imagine back in 1990, when things were even less sophisticated than they are now, it could have been a bit of a shock to the system, to somebody arriving straight from Paris.
Yeah, it was a positive shock. I'm not telling you that I've got more choice and I can find cheese and I can find coffee and I can find whatever I could find in Paris now I can, but back then you couldn't. But that's not what I was looking for. And, you know, because it was, I didn't have an ideal image of Australia like some people have when they want to come. I didn't do any plan, or I didn't have any preconceived idea. I was not disappointed. I actually loved it. I loved the openness of people, the bluntness of people, the kindness of people. I like the space. I like the opportunities you could have. It was different, completely different than Paris, but in a good way. So yes. It just fitted the way I was, my value somehow.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And back then I was, 22, 23? As I said, you're not finished, in brackets. You are a young adult, and I believe Australia shaped me also differently because I arrived that early. Not as a child, not as a teenager, but still, not set in life.
Yeah, a young person. And it was just 5 years after you got here, when I suppose you must have been in your mid to late 20s, that you set up Polyglot. Now, that's pretty amazing, that you were here for just a few years.
Yeah.
And then you set up your own company. And I'm sure there'll be people who listen to this today, young women who are, in their mid to late 20s, who think, wow, I don't know if I could do that. That sounds like quite a big call. Can you just tell me a bit about how you started Polyglot back in 1995? What made you start it, and what those early years of the company were like?
I actually didn't say, okay, I'm going to set up a business and I'm going to set up Polyglot the way it is today, or to do what Polyglot is today. So I'm an extremely practical person. So we went pretty quickly, on the private side of it. So met in 90, married in 91. Our first daughter was born in 92, the business in 95, and my son in 96. So that's why I set up the business, because of the children. So I actually didn't set up the business to start with. I started as an independent contractor, as an independent, not contractor, but independent sole trader, we were calling it back then. And it's just because I had been a headhunter, a recruitment consultant in a firm, and it was not meant to be set for mothers, okay? It's still not like this today. It's better, but back then, when you were a mother, you were not expected to work in Australia. Okay, so they would not tell you that like that, but they would say, "But your husband can't provide." Or trust
That's
me.
Pretty amazing.
At least they were frank. You know what I mean? Because even so, because I wanted everything and I couldn't be only a mother. I didn't want to be only a mother, and I had the most, and I have the most supportive of a half. I just said, okay, I'm going to work 3 days a week, whenever I want, at the time that suits me with, you know, looking after the children. And that's the way I started. I didn't question. I didn't say I'm going to set up a multinational and, you know, what the hell, how do I do this? And so, no, I had a need. I wanted something and I just found the solution. Then it evolves.
Yes.
But it was non-committal. It was just practical.
Yeah. And so you, over time, and what is it now? It's about 23 years since you started the business?
Yeah, something like this, yeah.
And over that 23 years, you've taken the company from a one-woman operation. I think you were based in Perth when you started, weren't you? Because you've been working in Sydney, and you went back to Perth.
Yeah.
You now headquarter the company in Sydney, and the Polyglot has really turned into a global company, and you've got presence which spans 9 time zones and partners all around the world. How did it happen?
It's the nature of our job as well. Okay, 95% of our clients, so our ideal client is a foreign companies wherever they are. So in Australia, obviously, it's the foreign entities coming in, so German, French, Chinese, you name it. We started servicing them, obviously, in Australia. And then, you know, the expats or the managing director, they turn around the world and they want the same thing wherever they are. And so we just followed our clients.
Yes.
It's just, I mean, not just, but you know what I mean? But we adapt to each market. But it's a question of, I'm practical there as well, you know?
Yes.
And so this is following the clients and giving them the same service wherever they are, but it's also the staff. So it's also because I've put so much emphasis on my people, on the polyglotter, what we call them polyglotter, that I've got people that have been with me for 15 years, and the first subsidiary overseas was opened by Jacques, who's been with me for 12 or 13 years. Only had one job, it's Polyglot. Did his internship with us from France, and he's still with us. So it's an example, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So it's somehow, Australia also is the size it is. It's a big country, but it's a 24 million people market, if I may say. And the only expansion was going global.
Yes.
So, you know, we could have gone global much earlier than 5 years ago, 4 years ago. But as I said, private first, my life first.
Yeah.
My son is turning 22 next month. So you made the, you know, the calculation. We started our international development when he was in year 12, which I knew I didn't want. I didn't want to travel or being stuck in something that I didn't want to before he was finished at high school.
And I think that is a great testament that you've managed to create a global company, but you've done it on your terms. So you've actually created a company that works for you rather than having your entire life dictated by the global expansion.
But this is actually the key.
Yes. Tell me about that.
To me, this is actually the key. Why company exists? I think we got it wrong. Not myself, but in general, human can't be slave of a company. So you need to always master it. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's always, you know, flat and you don't have, you know, hiccups, but you need to think about what is it that you want. You need to think about your priorities. Yes. So there is no wrong or right priorities. The right priorities are your personal priorities. So that could be the business. If it's only the if you know you only have the business, I think it's pretty sad if you only have the business. But that's my, you know, just my point of view.
I agree with you there.
And you have companies to actually bring something to the world, bring something to other people, whether they're your clients or candidates, or whether they're your employees.
Yes.
So to me, I see myself as I'm responsible for 100 families. We are just crossing the mark of 100 people, direct people, because we've got much more, but direct polyglotters. And I'm responsible for those families.
Yes.
So the people are not number. And I'm not a number either. So you need to fit this in your life, because this is only part of your life. This is not your life. So polyglot is my third child, but in order of importance, there is my other half, which is, you know, my husband and my better half, I would say. Then the children, then the business, and yes, not the other way around. Yes. And I would say even before my husband, there is me. So because without you being happy or, you know, settled or serene, you know, serene.
Yes.
Whatever, the rest doesn't work. And the business doesn't work either.
And look, I think that is a fantastic philosophy. And I wish that we heard more people talk about running their company that way, because we hear a lot about success, 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 and focus on the business. And obviously, if you want to be successful, you've got to focus. But I think you have, we've had a conversation before where you said that one of the reasons you've been so successful is because I think you said you were not obsessed with the business. The business had its place in everything else that was going on in your life.
I was not obsessed with the success, but the real question is, what is success?
Yes.
So for me, success is not being the CEO of Polyglot and we are multinational. The success is that I am fulfilled in my life, but in my private life to start with. Therefore, I can give and make others find their fulfillment.
Yes.
So, you know, it's like in a plane. You know, in a plane, they tell you if there's decompression in the plane, put your mask first and then help others. It's exactly the same in life. So it's women that are listening to us, and men, but specifically women, because they usually don't put themselves first, unfortunately, should remember this plain thing, you know? Be happy, fulfill your life, be selfish, like a, you know, male would qualify it, like women qualify it, like, you know, when you think about yourself, you're selfish, it is not true. Because the rest will follow. It's not complicated.
No.
What I've been blessed, because I've had parents and a mum specifically that always believed in me, and then I had a husband, a partner that always believed in me. So obviously, you know, it's easier to believe in you than, you know, most of people. But if you believe in yourself and if you are looking for your fulfillment, the rest will follow.
I love it. We're jumping around a little bit here, and we've talked a little bit about the early days of Polyglot, and I want to just ask you a little bit more about how you did the expansion, but can we just go back and can you tell me how you got your first international client? Or I suppose in a way, your business was a little bit international from the start because you were advising people coming to Australia, but just give me the mechanics of how that happened.
It's typically with a client that we were servicing here. We were doing their payroll, their recruitment, their HR,
Yes.
I mean, a little bit of everything that we offer. And managing director moved to open a subsidiary in Europe. And he asked, I want the same thing. I want the same service as what I was offered in Australia and New Zealand. Can you do it? So I thought about it because we thought about going to Europe. That's we decided to jump in and that's the way we did it. So it's really, we are also an Australian client that wanted to set up in Europe, specifically in France, like Jurlique, for example, which is a brand, an Australian brand. And so we help them, you know, it's inbound and outbound, whether you want to go out exporting or go come in, it works both ways. So that's really, I would call it, we're global locals, if you know what I mean. So we see things globally, but we have the local knowledge. And as I say, you don't know what you don't know. Even when Polyglot moves to the state and set up the San Francisco office, I don't pretend I know how it works over there.
Yes.
So that's who we are. We offer who we are to our clients. So you understand the hiccups of growth, international growth, and we share that with our clients and we accompany them with the growth overseas with our local knowledge.
So tell me a little bit about the work that you do these days. Who is your typical client and how are you helping them? What kind of things are you doing for them as you work with them around the world?
Okay, so a typical client is a company that is going, that is growing, okay? That is growing either locally or, but more specifically, internationally, okay? So let's say you have, I'll take an Australian client and they want to go and do their globalization. They're going to turn to us to find staff, to source staff locally, to help them with transferring some of their local staff, for example, to start a subsidiary, to help them with everything which is industrial relation locally, for the visa, for example, for the working visa, to set up the company as well, to set up their HR, you know, system. So our typical client is a client that wants to focus on their core business and leave what they are not good at or what they are not specialized at to specialists. So for example, all the startups from the States, and that's why we're in San Francisco, we help them go global worldwide from the States. You have companies that arrive in Australia and they don't know if Australia would be the headquarters Asia Pacific, or if they would set up in Melbourne or Perth or Sydney, we help them choose depending on their industry, depending on their market, their distributors, and so forth. We help them choose the right solution for them.
And has what you do changed very much as you've grown?
Yes, I mean, When I started, obviously, you know, when I arrived nearly 30 years ago, even though I had an HR master, I didn't know anything about industrial relation in Australia, the laws, the industrial laws, the work laws. So I turned to recruitment. So at the beginning, really, Polyglot was 100% staffing, okay, sourcing specialists locally, replacing expats by local, but with language skills and cross-cultural skills, like understanding the other culture. So it's not only the language, but it's the understanding the culture. As we grow, You know, it's like a snail kind of thing. You know, if you do like a snail, clients ask for HR, because I never did recruitment as a recruitment agency does here. Because my background is HR, I would always question. I would always say, do you have internally somebody that can do the job? Don't you have anybody internally you can promote and then replace that person instead of, you know, so I would always build a job description with my client that, trust me, 25 years ago they didn't have.
Yes.
So it was much more structuring it and trying to make them think at the big picture instead only at that position. So my clients ask for more. So then they ask for HR services. Then they ask for payroll outsourcing services. Then they ask for a language solution because it's talent management. So they had to translate their website. They had to translate their marketing. And they didn't want, you know, translator and interpreter. They don't come as an employee. You know, you have, they are subcontractors. That you have to find the right person with the right skills in the right specialty. So really, we developed the language span. So I started with the French and German, which I knew pretty well. Then we went to Japanese, Chinese, Spanish, and so forth. So that was the, we grew the culture range, if I may say. And we grew at the same time the HR solutions somehow. Yes. Because to me, recruitment is under the umbrella of HR. Not the other way around. So we are a company that helps other company grow and go global with everything which is HR.
And it sounds, from what you're saying, as though you have really grown by always by focusing on people, you know, by focusing on what the clients wanted and how you could deliver what they needed. And on the other hand, focusing on your team and where your team were going. And that seems to have been a fairly core part of the expansion.
But I'm a strong believer in putting back humanity back into business.
Yes.
It's what I explained earlier on about the priorities and the focus on people. Why do we do companies for people? How company works because of people or thanks to people. And we've lost somehow that track. Mm. And so that's what we do. That's the essence of Polyglot. It's putting back the human at the center.
It's great. As you work with clients across different cultures, obviously there is a difference in language when you're working country to country. What other differences do you find as you work with clients in different cultures? So, I mean, how is HR in France, for example, different to HR in Australia or to the States?
There is as much difference in, I mean, as much different HR, if I may say, as there is culture, okay? Because it's about people. Human resources, there's human in it. And humans, depending on where they're grown, what language they speak, what they've lived or how they've been raised, they have different culture, therefore different values.
Yes.
Therefore different perception. And it's not wrong or right, it's just different. So the basic of the admin is the same, but the way you perceive it and the way you process it is different depending on your culture. So the first thing, polyglot, what it means poly means multi and glot languages culture. So the name, there is something in the name, if you know what I mean. What we do is that we tend to get our clients aware of that culture. Because by the time you are aware there is cultural differences, you are becoming culture, not savvy, but you know, the awareness sometimes is not there.
Yes.
And the differences are, you know, you assume most of the time that everything is done the way you're used to do things. I'll give you a specific example. For example, holidays. okay? Annual leaves. I would call it annual leave because in the States, holidays is something else. Annual leave in Australia accumulates ad vitam aeternam, okay? So if you don't take your annual leave each year, it accumulates and you don't lose them. This is not the case in France, neither in China. So if you haven't taken as an employee your holiday within the year, you lose them. Okay, so that's why most of the time in Europe, from mid-July to end of August, the business is stopped because if you don't take your holidays, and I think the deadline is September over there, that's it, you're losing them. So everybody's taking the same, you know, their 5 weeks, and they have to have taken their 5 weeks by that date. When you set up a when you're an Australian and you set up a business in France, you don't know this.
No.
You assume it's accumulated, and then suddenly everybody takes their holidays, and you say no, or you say, what the hell are they living all together? Okay. The other way around is the same. You are a French company or a Chinese company, and you arrive in Australia, and you're used that all the people take all their leave during that they accumulated within the year, but they don't. And some clients I've seen was scrapping the holidays at the end of each year, which was unlawful in Australia. So it's just these little details that, you know, everything is made of details, of little things that we help with, and we don't assume anything.
So those small differences can make a huge impact, can't they?
But they do make a huge impact because you are liable if you do the wrong thing here or anywhere. And most of the time, the employer hasn't done it on purpose. It's just that they assume it's the same as where they come from.
Absolutely.
So it's... But, you know, when you at Polyglot, we speak 38 languages. We've got 38 different nationalities. And we discuss those things. And when you are culturally aware that nothing is the same and nothing can be perceived the same, you don't take it for granted. And therefore, you ask questions. And you question your client. You question the way they see things.
Mm. There are so many directions we could take this conversation right now, yeah. But I think where I want to go right now is hearing you talk about building Polyglot and expanding it around the world, you make it sound very, very easy, as though it's something that has just happened. But I'm sure there must have been some times that were difficult along the way. Can you just choose one of the times that you found hard as you were expanding internationally? And tell me about that and how you actually resolved it or what you did to get through.
The hardest part is it's keep the DNA and make sure the DNA, the Polyglot DNA, is the same everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we have Skype and, you know, video conferencing and you name it, we are blessed now, you know, it's much easier to communicate all over the world. You are not there physically and you are not there instantaneously when people have an issue and you don't see things, okay? Like, so that, to me, that's the hardest. It's to keep the DNA and keep the communication going. And when I say keep, it doesn't mean that the communication is broken, but it's that it is the same with all your teams.
Mm.
And that's why I travel a lot, because it's good to do some meetings via Skype, but it's better to see people face to face.
Yes.
And it's not only internationally, yeah? It's also locally. People now tend to send an email even though they can stand up out of their chair and walk 50 meters to see their colleague, but they choose to send an email. What the hell? So internationally and not internationally, the hardest thing is the collaboration, but a real collaboration, which is not only on tools, on this IT and communication tools. They're only tools.
Yes.
You will never replace the actual real conversation, real exchange, face to face. To me, that's the hardest.
And so how do you manage that? Because obviously you travel a lot, but you've got a big team now. You know, as you say, you're just crossing the 100 person mark. What else can you do to make sure that team is cohesive and that the culture that you have tried, that you've worked so hard to create, actually stays the way that you want it to be?
Okay, you need to, from an early stage, to think about when you're going to leave. So whenever you start your business, obviously probably not straight away, but pretty quickly, within 5 years, I wanted to get around myself people that knew how to do things I didn't, people that were good at things I would not be. Mm. And then you grow and develop these people. I think that's one of my success. I don't think I'm better than the next person in terms of what I do, but I might be better at choosing and developing and empowering people around me. Yes. And therefore they take on, it's like a relay kind of thing. Okay. It's their baby too. And when I leave Australia to go somewhere else, I don't even worry. They don't even call me. So in Australia, which is where is the base and where I've built and the oldest, somehow, it's working, okay? Because I've got a team of people that are working together, that have been in there, that believe in it, that are passionate about it, that I trust.
Mm.
And why it's why I find it difficult overseas, because it's newer, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And my role is to go and get the DNA there and empower those people as well. But they have less time of me, if I may say, or of my team, of my steering committee team, than the original people had, if you know what I mean. So
yes.
That's where difficult part is.
I guess it's a bit like being a mother who has more and more children.
Exactly. And then you give to the older children some, not task, but they have a role to play, which you don't give a role when you only have two children.
Yes.
It's exactly the same for me. It's raising, you're raising people. So raising, it's putting them, raising them, it's elevating them.
Yes.
Elevate, okay?
Yes.
So you need to elevate people around you. So you need to elevate yourself as well, because otherwise they don't have room to elevate themselves.
So it's about getting out of their way to let them do things. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. And understanding that you want to be challenged as an entrepreneur. I have no problem, and actually I'm worried if one of my manager to be or leader to be doesn't challenge me.
Yes.
But it's and we're back to what we were saying at the beginning. When you don't live only for the business, you're more able to accept that.
Mm. Yeah.
even though sometimes it's not easy. But this is the key. This is the key. And actually love my job now, because that's what I'm doing 100% of my time. It is actually developing people.
Yes. Now, we were talking about family and business, and I wanted to ask you, your children are now in their 20s, but you started this when they were just babies and before one of them was born. How have you juggled family life and being the owner of a business over the years? Because I think it is still harder for women than men on the whole.
It is still, unfortunately. First I started my business was from home, so that makes it easier. But I've had clients on the phone, and I had the baby, bouncer moving with my feet, the baby bouncer baby wouldn't cry. The second baby, I'm speaking about my son. I asked for help. And yes. And this is something that women need to do. I had two girlfriends, and they were also working part-time. And I learned to ask for help.
Yes.
Okay? And you know, the children are very... They learn very quickly as well. You know, for example, my children, when my mobile phone, which was as big as a brick back then, would ring in the car, I would stop and I would speak to on the phone, and my one-year-old at the back would not open his mouth. He knew.
Wow.
He knew, but I was with them. So, you know what I mean? It's like a compromise.
Yes.
And don't try to be perfect. Because you can't be perfect. It can't be perfect. Perfection doesn't exist, thank God. So you juggle, sometimes you lose a ball. It's okay. You learn, and the next time you will lose less ball. I'm back to happiness because, you know, even if sometimes you feel guilty because you don't think you've given up to you've given up to time to your children, for example, or you've missed something that might have, you know, seem important. They know, they know. And if you are happy, and if you explain to them, they'll understand.
Yes.
And the support came from my children as well. I remember something specific where I was nominated as the French woman overseas at the French Senate. Anyway, I was invited to go there. Everything was paid for and won the prize. And I was speaking in the kitchen with my husband and a nanny, and I said, I'm not going. It is my girl's birthday. And she was 8 back then, 8 or 10, something like that, in between. And she overheard me. She was in the living room, and she came in and she said, no way. No way you're not going, ma'am. It's only a birthday. This is your prize. We're proud of you. You know, I'm nearly crying now. Because I would have said that I was okay with not going.
Yes.
Me, she was more important than that prize. I would have still had the prize. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But for her to come and say, no. No, no, this is for you. You need to go.
Yes.
But it's also a way for her to show that she could do it.
Yes.
I didn't know back then, you know what I mean? But I, by doing that, I showed her the way.
And that's been a very powerful influence, I think, for your children, because at least one of them, your daughter, is part of the business, right?
Yeah, she joined 4 years ago, not at my demand, because she doesn't need me, if you know what I mean. She's her own person, very strong. But my steering committee, because she's done digital media, marketing media, media marketing, they wanted her to join to take on the global head of marketing and, yes. And go into the digitalization of Polyglot. And so she joined us nearly 3 years ago now. And that's the best thing we ever did. I love working with my daughter. And she reports to me, but it's she knows, she breathes Polyglot. It's her baby too. And it's such a reward for me.
That is fantastic to hear.
So it's not easy for her. It's easier for me because she wants to be not seen as Corinne's daughter. But she's my daughter, and there's nothing you can do about it. No, but you know what I mean. But
yes.
It's I admire her because I don't know if I would be able to do the same as she's doing every day.
Yeah. As you look back, is there anything that you would do differently? It doesn't sound as though you have any regrets about the way you juggled the family and the business, but is there anything that you'd change?
I have two more children.
Two more children, okay.
No, I'm saying this, but I wouldn't be here speaking about my internationalization of Polyglot because I wouldn't have done it. But if I'm not a baby person. I had children because I met the man of my life. But I was not obsessed with children, if you know what I mean. But I love adult children.
Yes.
I love the relationship I've got with them. I love the person they are, they had become. And if I could, I would have had more of those. Not more babies, but more of those. Which in a certain way I do have with some of my staff, not all of them, but some of my staff. No, really, I would trust myself more. Now I do, but back then, and I would not feel guilty as well. So I would get rid of the guiltiness of, even though I had less than others, I still had some. I hardly feel guilty anymore, and it is such a blessing. Like, you know what I mean? So I feel guilty sometimes, but for the right reason, not for the wrong reason.
Yes.
And just, you know, I've been happy. I've been blessed. I don't want to change anything. I don't want to change anything. I'd like to know more of what I know now. But this is everybody says that, you know. Yes. And somehow, maybe no, because I would probably not have done the same mistakes. And then you also learn from mistakes.
Yes, absolutely.
So, that's why I would say not much, except, you know, guiltiness and be more, you know, believing more in I can do anything. Because whether it's me or anybody, if you really want to, you put your head to it, you put your energy to it, you're positive and you bring people with you, it will work. Not probably the first time, not probably every time, but eventually it will work.
Yes. So you have to just keep going.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to ask you now quickly about books, because I know that you love books and that you read a book each week, which is pretty incredible given what else you're doing. How do you read a book each week?
I don't sleep much, but I've never slept. If I have a 6 hours night, I'm fine. So I'm lucky in that regard. I find the time. It's like, you know, you need. People say, oh, I don't have the time to do this and that. I disagree. You do find the time. It's exactly like priority, you know?
Yes.
And to me, reading a book is highly important to actually learn new things, to reflect, to escape.
Yes.
And to make your imagination work, because movies and things don't make your imagination work, but books do. So I read one book. I tend to read one book in English, one book in French. Sometimes I read 3 books in English in a row, and then I, you know, it depends. But I tend to, you know, balance that up. I cannot read 2 books at the same time.
Okay.
So I'm a quick reader, because people can, you know, start different books and read different books at the same time. I'm not like that. I've got a huge library.
And of that huge library, if you had to nominate your 3 favorite books or the 3 books that have been most influential in your life, what are those books and why would you pick those 3?
Okay, easy. The book, the number one, is a book that people think is for children, but is not. It's called Le Petit Prince or The Little Prince by Saint-Exupéry. This book is about a little prince. It's about telling you that you need to remain that child somehow, and you need to get back to essential things. And this is my bedside table book. So whenever I'm happy or extremely sad because I've lost somebody, or I reread this book. Okay? So that's the first one. The second one I would say would be completely different, because it's The Brave New World from
Huxley. Yes, that's very different.
Yeah, very different. But it reminds you of being careful.
Yes.
I love Huxley, and I actually it's the first book I read in English completely, because I had read all Aldous Huxley in French, much better in the original language.
Always better in the original language.
Yeah. And the third book would be, it's a book I read when I was a teenager, a young teenager. It's about Helen Keller.
Yes.
And it's about her life. And Helen Keller was blind and deaf and couldn't speak, obviously. And she broke through and she did something of her life. And she did actually do business and taught people.
Yes.
And I'm so admirative of her courage and her intelligence. And the story of her life, which is the book that I've given to both my children and my daughter, if you ask her, it's one of her books as well, funny enough.
It is a great book. So for people who don't know about Helen Keller, she was both blind, deaf and dumb. Back in an age where blind, deaf and dumb people were basically confined to an asylum, and she went on to have a pretty extraordinary and highly public...
In the 19th century, yeah.
Yes.
So not nowadays, which makes things even worse. Back then, and it shows that resilience, courage, and persistence pays off.
And we will try and put the links to those books in the show notes to this episode, so that if people haven't read them, they're three excellent books. People can go and look those up afterwards. So, because you know, we like to share the resources around. So, Corinne, you know, we've talked lots about life and family and polyglot and polyglot's international expansion. What is next for you?
Being a grandmother.
Is that on the cards?
I can't wait, actually. I can't wait. What's next is further developing polyglot geographically, but it's really getting my close team, my management team, up and running, so I can only work on it and yes. Not in it. And I'm nearly there. And it's not to stop or sell or anything, because I, when I'm at Polyglot, I'm not working, if you know what I mean. And I don't see myself gardening. But what I want is that when I am a grandmother, I want to take one day off and look after the grandchild or the grandchildren. I hope they are not going to come, you know, all in one vague. So I want to be able not to be disturbed for one day, but it's also it's already the case.
Yes.
Not being a grandmother, but not being disturbed for one day. And it's really, you know, developing the team, developing geographically, developing the team, but while remaining at a human size.
Yes.
My aim is not to become, you know, a 5,000 people company, or do, you know, in one word, it's not the money. It's the legacy.
Yes.
It's not the, you know, my dream is not to drive an Audi or a Ferrari, or even though I like it. This is not what makes me wake up in the morning. And more travel, but you know, I want to, if I could, I would spend all the winter months of Australia in Europe or in the States, while working and, you know, visiting and taking the time, and then come back here when it's summer.
Yes.
But not retiring for that reason. I'm extremely curious, so I'd like to, you know, we're going to Israel in October. I got that for my 50th. I've always wanted to go to Israel. It's nothing religious. It's just because to me it's the cradle of the world. I mean, the world the way we know it today. So I've got plenty of things in my bucket list like this. So I will explore businesses at the same time, because I can't, you know, count it. But I don't want to change anything in the next 10 years. You know, I'm in my early 50s. So the next 10 years is apparently the best. because you, I've been told that you don't have children at home anymore, you don't have grandchildren, you usually have more the financial means, but you're not old yet, like, yes. You know what I mean? So I'll see. I'll tell you in 8-9 years.
I'll have you back on the show then.
It's like children, you know, they always ask, oh, what's the preferred age or what's the preferred period? They're all good. It's really what you make of it. And I love my 40th. I love my 50th. I believe I'm going to love the next, you know, 6 or 20 or even 40 years, I hope. We'll see.
Karen, it's been fantastic having you on the show today, and I always really enjoy chatting to you. Can you share with me any final thoughts that you have for entrepreneurs, but particularly for women entrepreneurs who are thinking about embarking on this adventure of building a company that goes outside the home market?
Take a weekend away or take some time, clear your head, set your own priority. I'm not speaking business there, I'm speaking life priority. And then see how your project, your business project, your company project fits in it. Mm-hmm. And find out why you're doing it. The purpose of what you're doing is key. If you're doing it for the money, you're not going to do it the same way for your way of life. So you need to choose, you need to make sure you know that's your business plan somehow. That's your life plan. What's your priorities? What's your purpose? What is it that you want to leave behind? Why are you doing this? Before looking at how you're going to do it, ask yourself why. If you can't respond, you better think twice.
I think that is some fantastic advice, and that is a great note to finish on. Thank you again for being on the show, and I'm serious about having you back. I'd love to check in with you down the track and see, you know, what's taken place.
Thank you, Cynthia. You're welcome.
Hey, everyone. If you're enjoying the Business Beyond Borders podcast and you're thinking about expanding your company internationally, you might want to check out the International Business Accelerator, which is something I created to help micro to medium-sized businesses to speed up and de-risk the process of internationalization. The International Business Accelerator, or as we like to call it, the IBA, is a program built on the three principles of skills and knowledge, mentoring and accountability, and community. I built it especially for founders and CEOs who want to take their business to the next level and are wondering where to start. The program is structured in a way that's simple to follow. It's digital, so you can take part from anywhere in the world. It's a lot of fun and our members love it. So if that's you, if you're thinking about going global, check it out at internationalbusinessaccelerator.com.